the way he lives alone is no example of the what a guru. So he shake his head and he walk away. Go back, he didn't say nothing. He go back to his father, he says, that's a disgrace, it's a shame to think you of all people to send me to such a person. That is my guru. How can you do a thing like this to me? Father says, yes, he's your guru, you go right back. You go right back, he's your guru. Well, he struggled in his mind, and he basically, okay, just to please the father, he went back. He went back and he's standing in front of the courtyard again, he sees the same thing. In fact, this time it's getting more louder and everything, everybody's kissing the king, and he's having a ball. He can't figure this out. Here, just then, he's about to turn his mind away from all these things and decide once and for all he's going to be a hermit. To heck with his daddy's ideas, to heck with this guy, he's going to find himself. Then the king turned around and says, hey young man, just a minute. Come. And came home. Oh, I see you are Sakuntala, the son of the great Muni Vyas, eh? He didn't even introduce himself. I mean, the king didn't even introduce him to who he was. He just told him straight off who he was right there. Now shook him up right then. And he just missed the court. He says, come sit down, man. What you got on your mind? So the kid now wanted to know. He says, well, I've come to, my father sent me to you today. My guru wanted to study. Well, let's talk about God. So they start talking about God. All of a sudden, a big fire flared up in the compound. While it's going on, somebody ran in and said, your majesty, the palace compound is on fire. He says, don't disturb me, you go and do what you can. Don't you see I'm talking to God with my friend here? An hour passed and the fire is getting bigger and bigger. The same man came back and said, your majesty, it's getting close to the palace door, right? He says, you do what you can, say what you can. Don't interrupt. I'm talking to God with my friend here. Another hour passed and the flames are coming in the door right now, into the building, in the room where they are. And Sakuntala is, he sees a flare. Here's his little pile of books that he cherished so much, you know. Oh, the fire. And the king is looking at him. The king burst out laughing. He says, young man, who's more matter soaked? Who's more matter conscious? You, a pile of books you tried to save, a pile of writing. My palace is all burned out. He says, I don't even give a hoot. You claim that you're more God man. Here you are stuck with your little pile of books. Anyway, he did like clapped his hand. The fire stopped, clapped his hand. The second of his burn came back, clapped his hand a third time. Everything was exactly where they were. This kind of shook up the kid now. he realized that this was really a master now. He wasn't just an ordinary guy. He wasn't just because he had joined the life, you know. He was really a master. Well, the master, in fact, he would not have done that if he didn't want the man as a disciple. Now, knew that this man was a disciple, you see. His father knew already, you see. When the kid had to pass through this particular shocking experience, the father knew how far this other man had evolved already, so he knew where his son had to go. So, he says, you know, you ask a hard thing, discipleship, initiation. You have to merit this thing. The first thing, you got to prove that you can obey. Well, here are two lamps full of oil. He lit them. He said, now hold in both hands. They're full of oil. And walk through this entire palace and see everything inside and try to memorize it. Then I see you. Describe it to me when you come back. Well, he walked through and in 2 hours he was back. So the king says, you mean you memorized everything in my palace so fast? You've got a wonderful brain. He says, no, your majesty, I was too busy watching not spill a drop of oil on your beautiful carpets. I didn't have a chance to see anything. He says, well, you failed my test and go back home. Well, this is a disgrace to fail the test and go home to your father, you know. Oh boy, this could never happen to you. The daddy said this was the guru, and now you fail? The guru don't want you? This is worse. Anyway,
he says, no. Okay, I'll give you another chance.
This trip now, 10 hours pass, 17 hours pass, he didn't see the boy. So the king went looking for him.
And he found him in the garden, sitting with the two lights like that. Lamp. Over here, consciously. Then the king says, well, you pass. The door is a perception. Can you tell me what is in my 10th floor story? Oh, king, better than the gold on the table is the love that molded it. Better than the love that molded the gold on the table was the thought who gave birth to it. Better than the thought that gave birth was the fact that reality isn't enough at all. The king says, you are my disciple. You are free. You're a free man. And he went back home to his father. He had realized what he came from. See, once we realize that this power is in us, then we are forced to go back into the world and live in the world. See, the great sages do not want us to avoid the world. The world is necessary for certain karmic life. When we use the word karma, don't think of it being bad. It's not bad. Karma is only a Sanskrit word meaning action and interaction, cause and effect. We live in the world of cause and effect, action and reaction. We cannot avoid it. We can learn to cope with it. So we say accidents are not happening to us, they are caused by us. Even the insurance company today will say, you didn't happen, the accident just didn't happen to you, caused it somewhere. They know that we live in this world of causation. And because of that, we realize that we are causing certain forces to come into play in our lives daily, for good as well as for not so good. Now, there is no such thing as bad in the universe. There are levels of goodness all the time. What is good at one level is considered bad at another level. No. And what is bad at one level is considered good at another level. It all depends on the relationship and the involvement and the understanding, the sensitivity of the understanding. For instance, Sakuntala was reared in a home that ate no meat. There was no such vile dancing and no exposure of the body overtly. And here you came all of a sudden into the king's palace and all these things were going on. You see? And he couldn't cope with it. Right away it was a shock. But then he began to realize that all these are only parts of existence. They are not really what we are. Then we became free. Thing is, when you go inside, you're trying to realize the consciousness of your existence and how to bring this consciousness of your existence into the waking state. And you only can achieve this by meditation. You see, drugs do simulate it or make you experience a sort of false condition of it. It doesn't produce a lasting condition, it produces a temporary condition. You have something to compare, but it's temporary, it's not permanent. And you don't have the control of your will, you see. Because if you have a toothache and you put a drug, you will numb the spot. And the pain will be temporarily suspended. Now, if you could employ the will and permanently suspend it, then you suspend it, and some people do that. Occasionally through hypnosis. Hypnosis is, or what you call it, suggestion. There's no real thing called hypnosis in the real sense of the word. These are all functions of the laws of life, and suggestion is a powerful law. It can control, and that's the today we realize now why we have psychosomatic diseases. Diseases of mind and body relationship. We actually cause these diseases by the mind and the body. And it's true suggestion. For instance, you're a young person and you hear the parents say, oh, go away, don't bother us. You're so clumsy, you can't do nothing right. It's the first statement, and 3, 4, 5 times. and keep saying it, and before you know it, you begin to respond to a clumsy action, a clumsy behavior. You never seem to be doing anything right. You follow me? So what is happening? You are self-hypnotizing yourself. This is the term you would call it, but actually what you're really doing is that you're responding to sound waves set up by the environment, which consider your actions as being clumsy. They have no measurement of what clumsiness really is, and you have no measurement of what clumsiness is to you. You may be doing it accurately as far as you're concerned, as far as they're concerned, you're doing it inaccurate, you see. So only because in their relationship, from their experience, they have that much control. In your relationship, from your experience, you've got this much control. So control is a thing they are arguing over. And clumsiness is only in relation to how much control you have over a thing. The more you do a thing, the better control you have, and the less clumsy you are. You see? And at least the more you do a thing, is the more clumsy you appear to be. So clumsiness don't exist. It's lack of involvement. Not being exposed to the thing enough. This is why we say a person is clumsy. Isn't true? Everyone has an ability, but you may not have enough opportunities to apply the ability. And that's where we need the opportunity. I guess you got lots of questions to ask. Let's have some meditation.
None of which you magnetize this one.
This is the fish.
Yeah.
So the first question, yes, second question, we are all brothers and sisters of light because the human body is a manifestation of light, it's energy. I said before, the universe was made for a man, and not man for the universe. God, the creative intelligence, could not create man first and the universe second. How would he provide for the creature? Now, you're not going to catch the bird before you have the cage to put it in. If you're a human being, don't do that. You see? Great intelligence would not do the same thing. You would always have the cage first, and the bird seed, then you go get a bird for it. Right? So the cage was made for the bird, not the bird for the cage. And that's the same thing. The world is made for us, not us for the world. That's why we are free. Our destiny is the stars. Transmigration of the stars all the time. We migrate and migrate from planet to planet. Our whole universe is one migration principle. We are nomads, not yes-mads. When you run into a yes-mad, stay clear of him. A nomadic life, in the physical sense, the spiritual sense, is a truth. Because we are wanderers of life. When they say wonder, is that a nameless wonder? Light is a wandering force. It moves all the time. If you put a light and you take a disc and cut some slots in it and put a little motor and let that disc spin around that light, it'll throw, and especially if you put little segments of various colored paper in it, it'll throw a multitude of motion all around the room. And you set up music to it, you will see this experience that man is light, because his face will start to change into different, you see, actions and so on. And if he starts to move slightly in that motion, the person who is observing will start to see many different things of the same person. See, this is one way to know that the human being is light. And we know it by matter, because this is matter, and it's composed of 16 chemical elements. Today, I think it's $1.90 now. It used to be $1.60 at one time. Yet, the scientist cannot put it together and make flesh. He knows what it is, but he can't make flesh with it. He knows that matter is energy. And he knows energy is light and heat. And the first thing that was ever created in this universe out of antimatter was light. See, for everything we have an opposite. This universe is polarity, male and female, light and darkness. Everything is in a state of polarity. So there are only two actual things that do exist. One, pure energy as light. Two, consciousness as anti-light, or the thing that holds light together. You cannot see it, but you can feel consciousness. You can feel the presence of masters, but you don't see them until you raise the speed of light up. Now you have to raise up the light in your mechanism to see them at the level they're in, because they exist in an antimatter state, or an invisible state if you want to call it. It's invisible to the extent of the normal range, but if an animal can see them, an animal knows when a master comes in the room, or any being comes in the room, he can sense, because their vision is natural, and the same way it does. But they're seeing light in it, they're refracting, the pupil is refracting light differently. See, the rods and the cones in the retina are doing the action like a camera, and it picks up the light differently. Now, the fully realized master emits light in his body all the time. And you can feel it. It's a sort of like a current going through it. It goes right through the whole. You feel like a sort of electrical force moving. Now, if the masters are always here all the time, you can link into them, because it's all electricity. See, God is light and sound. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the Word was made flesh, and the Word dwelt with man. Now this is a genuine truth, it's an actual fact. At the very instant of creative manifestation, sound vibration was present. So to say, in the beginning was the Word. Yet at the very instant, breath and sound are there. Now, I want something. Let's say I want bread. I think I inhale and I feel the texture to my mouth, like if I know what that piece of bread should taste like. Then I go out and get the actual result. You see how the relationships are linked up? They're all sound principles, all consciousness inside. So that's what I say. Pure light, which is heaven. You see, there is no such place called a heaven, or there is no such place called a hell. There are two planes of motion, because God is all motion. And he is the motionless motion, because without this motionlessness in it, it will be out of harmony. It will fly apart. There is no such force flying apart by itself. They all contain some law of balance, some geometrical action. It obeys laws. more so delicately balanced, that everything is accurate. It's strange that such a great intelligent condition exists, but it is there. It's fast and slow.
Now,
the slower this consciousness becomes, and the slower this light becomes, is this the denser and the solid it appears. And the human body is a slow S-form it's appearing in. So we say, intelligence of God chose to condition himself, or herself, or itself, into a body. Therefore, they say the body is the temple of the living God. Now we know why they use the term. We would not have known before. Why they call it the temple? What is a temple? It's a location. And why is it living? Because it's vibrating, because it's not a dead object. And God is not a form. It's a principle. So you say the body is the temple of the living God. No. And then the masses of life in Geneva say, know ye not that ye are gods? Don't you know that this manifestation is God in its purest sense at a slow speed? Can you not realize it? Know ye not. Can you not realize or recognize that at this slow speed, which is a body, which is a manifestation of the pure intelligence, is God already? And don't you realize that it was made flesh? This same principle, slowed down, is a form of flesh. And dwelt in man. The only way you can comprehend or communicate is sound. You see? Now everything gives up sound. Half a sound. You still got the sound of it. If you clap, you got two. And if you do this, you still got sound. Everything's got sound. So there's nothing in this universe or anything in this universe that doesn't give up sound. So it's there all the time. Now, that's why they said that the Word, in the beginning was the Word. In the beginning was this cosmic force, cosmic vibration. Now, your name is Randy, right? But that's a word, that's a sound. To identify this conditioned body. So the name of God is sound. He has no other name. He is the cosmic sound. So why don't we say, dear cosmic sound, happy am I to meet you in my voice. Happy am I to talk to you back. I recognize you. You are me. Where else can you be but in this voice, this talking? This miracle, this inhalation, this exhalation. This is the greatest miracle. This is the God principle. Know ye not. Can I not understand? Why am I so dense? What's pulling me apart? What's separating me? This is it. I recognize that sound, life, this is the force, light, this is the thing. Now, we are brothers and sisters of light, and in a true sense, pure light. We share life within. You see, the genes of our bodies are compositions of light at different speeds. And the pigmentation is only a different way it refracts the light. Anybody study art or painting, you'd know that one color is only true in relation to the next color next to it. Otherwise, a color has no color. If you were to separate a color from its next color, top, bottom, or sideways, it would be no color at all. It can only have existence as a color because it has something next to it. This is only red in relation to because this is green, or this is pale, or there's some other next to it. It's a fantastic dimension in which it's existing. You cannot recognize it, because if you were to switch off the light, it has no color no more. Light gives it color, but its relationship is only in relation to the next one. So the chemical relationship that is causing the light to break up allows you to perceive this as a color. Really, there is no color. Yet there is all colors, because only of light. Now you see light shining, and you said, "Jeeves, I don't see no color in that light." And somebody says, well, I'll show you that whole thing is all colors. Isn't that white? There's no such thing as white. He says, this guy's nuts or something. Then you go get a crystal, and you hold it at a certain angle, and you break the light. What you have done, you cause a diffusion to occur, and then you start to see the colors of the rainbow. And you start to realize there are colors. Where did it come from? How did it get in there? And yet it's all white light. Now, true in ourselves, we are light. Now, we have this light in the form of the human body. Now, Jesus said, when thine eyes are single, that means single vision, now centralized, the whole body is full of light. Now, if this be the temple of God, and if God be sun and light, then if my eyes are required to be focused, to be single, or centralized, which means one point, and my whole body would be light, this is proof enough that we are all brothers and sisters of light. Right? What other proof do we need? We can take it and break it down atomically and look it under a microscope to satisfy ourselves by scratching a match, we'll all end up as light. Ignite the cells, they're all going to go up in light. So, the proof that everyone or everything in nature at its slowest speed in this form of matter is really light. And if that speed is increased, we will be exhibiting pure light. If you take this object and you increase its speed to a point where it became invisible, it would have to approach the speed of light to be invisible to the naked eye. And the speed of light is considered 186,000 miles a second. This thing would have to rotate at that velocity in order for you not to recognize it. And therefore it goes away from your vision temporarily. And therefore this is only an extension of light again. Now, if you raise this to the speed of light squared, it will ignite itself into light. It'll be just, that's all light. It's only burned back into pure energy. So there is nothing here, actually, in this universe that is not energy, which is not light. This whole universe is light. In other words, God is light.
But then the relationship between sound and light,
which comes first, the sound or the light? You've heard thunder, you've seen lightning. Two physical manifestations of the reality of God. Which comes first? Light. The sound or the light?
They come at the same time, only we hear it.
Right. You see the light first,
right.
And then you hear the thunder.
But they're
later.
Also at the same time.
Right.
Oh, so yeah. Isn't the light and the sound the same thing?
Huh?
Isn't that the light and the sound the same thing?
They are same in existence at the instant of contact, but they are not the same in relative relationship from an observation. You see, sight will pick up the light faster than the hearing will pick up the sound. Yet if the hearing is increased, or the hearing becomes acute or intuitive, then the hearing transcends the sight. No man saw God but saw his light, but man can hear God all the time. Big difference, eh? So you can always hear God all the time, but you may not always see him all the time. So it said, in the beginning was the Word. In the beginning is cosmic sound, his name. The divine current, divine life stream. Out of that divine life stream, this current is going, this sound is present all the time. Hearing it is a whole lot easier to accomplish than seeing it. Seeing it can be delusive, but hearing cannot be delusive, because hearing is the final thing. Those who have heard my name or my voice know me and who I am. Those who have seen me and think that is what I am may not know it is themselves. See? Now, if you're hearing the divine current, then close your eyes. This is what meditation helps you to hear it. And then seeing it, the voice you hear. This is the purpose of it.
Don't you hear at the same time and see at the same time?
It's just like the thunder and the lightning. You see, they are working together. But normally, any human being in the outward world, you see the flash of lightning before you hear the thunder. But in the inward realm, you hear it first before you see it.
I thought some people saw the light first and then heard it, and then other people heard it and then saw the light.
They may not recognize that they're hearing it, but they always hear it first before they see it. And I'll tell you how you can, you're always hearing it and did not recognize you were hearing it until it's pointed out to you that you're hearing it.
Isn't it impossible to hear it unless you have the initiation?
No. That would not be. Because God is always present as sound. You may not recognize him as this particular sound that you're hearing. You do not know that is really him. And when you're initiated, it becomes obvious to you. In other words, it is accentuated in your consciousness, that sound. Initiation is only an accentuation of that particular sound that you are blessed to hear and did not recognize. That is the purpose of having a living guru, to make you recognize the thing. In other words, you pass this and did not know it was a rose. You smell it every day, boy, that's a beautiful flower. Yeah, it's a flower, but it has a name. Well, what do you call it? Well, I don't know. So the gardener or horticulturist said, that's a rose. Yeah, it's a rose. What kind of rose? There's so many different varieties. You still need somebody to point out which one is which. You understand? You're hearing many different songs inside and may not recognize what they represent or what they really are. But a guru is initiating you, is only the living contact that accentuates your consciousness. This one is the thing you gotta listen to. This particular vibration, this one, link yourself, this one. In other words, this particular strain is the one you're listening to.
But Charan Singh wrote that the disciple was disconnected from the sound over the many incarnations of being acting through the senses, and then the master had to come and take him with it again.
Right, he has to come and point it out, accentuate it back for him to hear it, so he can be linked back to it. Now, you see, you really don't lose it in the true sense. When you use the word, you're using it figuratively. You lose the recognition of the sound that is passing through. The audible light stream passes through all of us. We cannot stop that. We may not recognize the sound of the audible life stream in us. That is what we call the name of God or the word, the cosmic vibration. We may not recognize it. We lose the recognition of it by being involved through the five senses in nature, because the five senses have a tendency to shut it out and exclude it from our... It's a refined form of energy, a very refined form of sound. So refined that it requires a silence to hear it. That's why in monastic orders they involve themselves in silence in order to listen. It's like a musician. See, you have to listen so keenly for it that to recognize it, it's coming back. Now, once we hear it, it may sound strange to us and we may not know what it is. You may think you've gone nuts. You've got a balminess or bees are buzzing in your head, or you've got something wrong with you. You've got a blow in the head or something. Well, you may not, this thing will bother you for quite a while till you get aggravated. Why is it? Then you will come in contact with a master who will initiate you, that is to say, through his audible life current, he sends the force into you like a battery charger and causes your brain to speed up to recognize the thing. That's what he does when he touches you. He accentuates the charge. You see, the charge in your brain is slow because it's been drained off. You have drained off the brain charge in involving yourself with material objects. He has only reserved his brain charge by going back in and making his body a power energy, a transformer. So that's what he really is. Now, when Jesus says, if you look inside, you see your whole body is light, pure energy, consciousness. But when you get the initiation, you hear this sound, it becomes louder than normal. And then you start to listen for it. And in listening for it, it has its own particular melodies. Because it's on that, you have all the whole scale. Our scale is not seven, you know. There are more scales up there than you ever dreamed to begin to number mathematically. God is not limited to seven. And only in our world we think we live in seven, you know, but that's not true. It's unlimited scales. A master only accentuates it for us by making us conscious of it. That's why they initiate, and that's why they try to get people to meditate. Meditation helps you to prepare yourself more and more to bring it in. Now that answers your first, second question, is that you're all brothers and sisters of light. This is matter, pure energy. And I saw Rami's face change to so much to me, this third question here. Is she has answered it herself. I have seen and know on some other plane. She has met you on some other plane of consciousness. But you don't know it.
When they were asleep.
You see, I ask a question many times to everybody. Do we know who we are when we are sound asleep, if we are male or female? This is the first test you have to pass in the road of realization. If you want to realize yourself, that's the first thing you have to accomplish. Don't try to accomplish to move the mountain or do all the other, try to walk on top of water. Learn to master each step in its real sequence and you'll find that you'll master all the others. Find out for sure who you are when you're sound asleep, if you're a man or a woman. And you'll find that you will not sleep unconsciously anymore.
What do you mean?
Well, do you dream?
Yes.
You dream every night. And, are you aware of the fact that you are dreaming? That you are playing the role of man or woman in the dream? But yet there is a conflict as the fact that you know you are a man in this existence. And rather you would stick to the one form that you know more than the one that would appear to be in a dream. There's the conflict that goes on. We want to be the thing we think we are. Another thing that is occurring within us. Now, the thing that is occurring within us is showing us our true nature, that we are neither man nor woman. We are pure consciousness. And that in any given situation, in any human body form, it is how you react to those conditions make you free. See, the masters are not only men, you know, they're women too. And you use the word master, it implies freedom from the repercussion of thinking. A master of life is any individual who has achieved the ability to be free from the repercussions of their thinking. Therefore, your sins are forgiven thee. Now you understand how your sins are forgiven thee. If your thoughts don't have any repercussions in any form that are detrimental to you, you're a free soul. If what you say don't hurt you, or don't come back and hit you in your face, you're free. Now,
why is that so much harder to do than just a man's
thing? Yeah?
I can imagine such an existence, but I feel it's so much harder to do. The thoughts just keep finding.
The human mind. Mind is a never flowing force. And because it's in the whole body is energy, and her energy is in a vibrating rate, this is in speeds. And what appears to be difficult primarily is our association with the environment in which we live in. Our environment tells us that it's round, because we have been exposed to accept it through the five senses as round. We are exposed to the sensation that it stays stable and doesn't go away from being round. It doesn't get flat like one. You ever look at those mirrors when you go to horror houses? You look one way and the things stretch one way. Well, imagine this is exactly what the universe is. Everything has been stretching around in different positions, but the vision has imprisoned itself to hold certain things as they really are. We are photographically recording through the vision conditions to satisfy the brain that will appear as a harmonious environment, lest we end up appearing and living in a schizophrenic existence. The whole universe is one big schizophrenic existence, because there's no such wrong thing in the universe. Everything is pure energy in a state of motion. You understand? But this appearance of being wrong, this appearance of being coordinated and solidified, is a mental action. It's not really there. That's why the sages say that this is an illusion, that man cannot live in reality. It would be impossible for man to live totally in the reality. He can only dip into it occasionally and draw from it and come back into the illusion. So it is through sleep we are given a chance to experience the reality. Now, but we sleep in an unconscious way, because we don't recognize ourselves in this. We don't recognize this fluidic existence of ours. We don't know how this fluidic existence of ours. We only recognize it as a stable, static existence when you're awake. And we have confidence that this is solid, it's not going to fall on our heads. Yet if you were to see the reality of it all the time, that it is flowing, and yet you can push your hand right through it, you wouldn't want it no more. You get scared of it, because you don't know if you're really standing on something solid. You're going sliding right through it. You see? This is the conflict. You feel like the whole, well, brother, am I really sitting in a whole ocean of water? The ocean of life is water. It has a water effect on the mind. That's why even the sages use as the water as a symbol to calm the mind, because it has no depth. There is no solidity in it. But we freeze it in our will. That's why we freeze water into ice. We freeze reality into illusions by our five senses. There aren't no real thing there. Only for the five senses they appear real. But this is a frozen effect. This is an illusion that we have to free ourselves from. It takes a long time to free ourselves from it, because we're accustomed to it from the environment. And the moment you get free from it, you realize that you can't live too long in it, because it's too overpowering. Now, I remember one time, Master once said, a student came to him and said, Master, why don't you give me an experience in cosmic consciousness? Why don't you give me that experience where I can see the whole universe as cosmic light and all in motion going on? So the Master said to him, I'd be glad to give it to you, my son, but I don't think your brain can stand the shock, because it's like trying to put 1 billion volts right away into a little bulb. It'll burn itself out too fast. The illumination, the shock will be too great. Now, the shock will be too great on the human brain if it's constantly exposed 24 hours a day, 365 days, to the total reality that's going on. You go out of your consciousness. You cannot. Now, the little experience that some people had is so blinding that they say you can't stand the light, because it's going on too fast. The closest thing that came to it to give some sort of an insight was the psychedelic techniques of LSD. That was the closest thing that came to it. But even that doesn't come as close to the reality what's really occurring in cosmic consciousness. Because in cosmic consciousness, when it comes into you, if you do have the experience, you can be sitting in this room and you know exactly what's occurring in India right now. And if, let's say you saw something in India right there and you wanted it, there would be no, there would be nothing to prevent you sitting in this room, transporting it from there by your consciousness, the actual thing. You can even photograph it, but have it there too, as evidence in pure cosmic consciousness. This is a reality. It exists. But you couldn't do that with a psychedelic drug. You couldn't transport nothing. You would imagine it, but when you come out of your imagination, you're still back in your room empty-handed, but not in a cosmic state. In a cosmic state, this is where we part company. One has tangible evidence. The other one does not have tangible evidence when we resort to the drug or any form of agent to induce some form of conscious experience.
But there is one guy that said he took LSD and then he had more compassion. Why did he have more compassion?
This would be good if you look at it in that way. Compassion, humility, these are qualities that are normally inhibited in our mechanism. From the food we eat, the environment and the education and the behavior, that not having a chance to express itself, the LSD would be a possible way of breaking that barrier and releasing it. Normally it would not have the chance to take many physical handicaps or sufferings to bring about compassion in that man. He might have to fall downstairs 100 times or slam into many people, walk all over him for a while before he would wake up to compassion. In other words, it would be a slow process. Pain is a slow process to get there. The LSD was just a fast, quick shot, what you call a hot rod way of getting a behavior experience. Follow me? He hot rod the brain to experience a behavior that is a genuine thing that can come through pain. Now, we don't want to arrive at compassion by pain. We don't want to hot rod the brain with the chemical. We want to arrive at compassion as a natural state. But you can do this naturally because it's already built into the mechanism. Don't think that the great creator did not figure out a long time ago LSD. And he did figure out all the pains and sufferings to leave out, that you can cultivate this thing naturally. You mean to tell me you didn't think of this already? There are more greater LSDs yet to be discovered. No. Within this mechanism, all the chemical structure are in certain relationship that can be controlled, and its will. And it has to do with the organizing of meditation. You see, you can go right inside immediately and dip into it. And you can feel a discharge, this thing charges up. And once you dip into it, it starts to bring out peace. This is natural. This is what you're trying to get, a natural condition. Now that doesn't say you sit down and don't do nothing no more. That is not what you're accomplishing. The purpose of meditation, a natural way. Now if you take a drug, you can feel numb. There is no tension. You feel relaxed, like a tranquilizer. Tranquil, to make you peaceful. Nice name, you know? Tranquilizers. It tranquilizes what? It's a semi-paralyzed the organs, so they are semi-numb to pain, which is suffering, to experience a sort of a suspended action that you can face the pressure of the environment. Now, as soon as that tranquilizer dissipates out of the system, the pressure of the environment is still there, it didn't go away. You can't hold back the environment with a tranquilizer all the time. You'll have to learn to hold it back by your will eventually. And as you say, why don't we see all these things? Why is it so difficult? The difficulty is that we haven't developed the will to cope with it, to hold it back. You see, it's the will. That's the first thing we have to develop. You see, If we don't develop the will, then we cannot hold back. And when we develop the will, then we surrender the will.
How do we do that?
First thing to develop the will is to do those things that you dislike to do first. This is true. Not all of us like to do the things that we don't like to do right away first. We always procrastinate. But procrastination is one of the forms that corrodes the will. It is the corrode of the will. It actually causes corrosion of the will. Procrastination. If you don't procrastinate and you exert yourself, that's where we come to the term gunas, you know. The three types of gunas, or the three modes of attitudes. A guna is only an attitude. You have your rajasic, your tamasic, and your sattvic. Your tamasic attitude is an attitude of inertia. Therefore, procrastination tends to produce inertia. And certain foods that you eat help that tamasic or inertia state to prolong itself within your mechanism, make you sluggish.
Like me.
Yeah, so it's because the toxins are settling in the tissues and they're causing an inertia buildup. Now, your rajasic state or your active state, that's the state of part activity and part sluggishness. This state helps to stimulate. This is a state where you have to exert a certain percentage of will. To be active. No. But to be active is to be in condition, like a boxer. This you have to take in hand, you have to train your body and train your mind to be, in other words, you're always in training. An active life is a life of training. It's a life of disciplined action. It's an action. You're constantly disciplining this mechanism. So you're constantly watching, not trying to outdo, but trying to understand. Then finally, your sattvic state is that attitude that allows you to perform actions that are necessary for the continuance of life. That's why they say it's a pure life or a pure state, purity. What is pure? No one can say what is pure, but one can understand what is the continuance of life. If you have the actions that are necessary for the continuance of life, then you have what is called a universal attitude, which is a pure attitude. You have a non-profit attitude. You see? Because the attitude is not something for nothing. You're not taking away or you're not hoarding anything, because you are realizing yourself that here is where it is, it's pure action. So, if you are in a state of inertia, then your will is corroded by procrastination. If you're in a state of activity, your will is in a state of discipline. Because discipline sharpens the will, make you active. And if you procrastinate, the will gets weak. That's inertia, that's tamasic. If you are disciplining the will and you're active, then that's rajasic. If you're allowing divine will to guide you by divine grace, then that's sattvic.
How do you do that?
You mean intuition? Or just let the
intuition
flow?
I can't figure out that. How you can tell when you're exerting your will and when you're being guided by divine will?
Yes. Or she meant ego.
Well.
Try one day. And this is only by trial, because it's an experience you have to experience for yourself. You say, you know, why don't I come to Dallas? And I say, Divine Mother willing, I will. If she ain't willing, then I stay where I am. Now, then all of a sudden last night, you folks say, you're coming. I said, yeah, it's all right. Let's look back at simple things that have occurred, and you will see. You have experienced all three levels and cannot recognize it. Recognition is spirituality. Big vocabulary is that big understanding. It's a big difference, you see. A person can have a big vocabulary as to what the spiritual life is, but he may not have a big understanding to what it really is eventually. Big understanding is realization. That doesn't necessarily have to have big words. Understanding is the ability to use a thing, the ability to recognize that your environment in which you're living in. And this is spirituality. Real spirituality is not churchianity. It has nothing to do with a building. It has nothing to do with high masses or all these things. It has to do with recognizing your relationship to your environment and to the source of your existence, from where you came from, why you exist in this particular environment, and what purpose you are serving this environment. If you say, well, this is the way I say it, because this is the way I program my consciousness. I used to say, I will be there tomorrow, years ago, and I never could get there. I want to go there, and I never got to go there. And I found out, after reading the lives of great masters, none of them would say they want anything. And I never say, I will do such and such a thing. Then I found out that these two principles, want and will, are corrosive elements in our lives. I will do such and such a thing, you find out you never really do it. You procrastinate. That's tamasic. I want such and such a thing, that's rajasic, when you never really do it. You're constantly spinning your wheels. Now, you turn it around and you take what the great master Jesus would say, thy will be done. What I'm doing right now, I'll continue to do, and if it's the will of God, I'll be taken out of it into something else. An opportunity will open up to take me out. Because this universe was made for me and not me for it. And I show it illustration in my own life, and I show it illustration in your life. First, how long was you writing me that they wanted me to come to Dallas and calling, wanting, right? No. I did not say need. I didn't say need, I said wanting. Remember, in this particular study of yourself, every word carries a particular force behind it. That's why in the beginning of the word, and the word is in man. Man is God already, the word. He alone directs his life by the words he uses. Therefore, no realized master would ill choose a word for any purpose. You would never make a wrong choice in words. And if you listen to their words specifically and analyze what they're talking about, you will see why they can accomplish the things they accomplish, and the other person cannot. The programming of the brain by words is the key to the release of the forces around you. As a man thinketh in his heart, that is what he is. To be free from the repercussions of thinking is not to use the wrong verbal programming in your brain. Language is the key. Well, language is word. And if you don't understand it, you make a mess of your own life with it. Because that's the thing that fouls you up. Nobody really fouls you up, but the language they use that fouls you up, she's clumsy. Right away, it's language that makes you foul up, think you're clumsy.
Isn't that a suggestion that doesn't?
All right. But it takes, again, the programming of someone to suggest this thing to you, and you have to accept it or reject it. So again, it is involved with the language patterns. Now, if you can take a language pattern and adjust it to your own advantage and use it, then it's different. That's where we come into the words of semantics. The very first thing one should learn about in realization is the use of words.
What if I say I need to have you come, and I really didn't need you to come? That would be just a suggestion, wouldn't it?
You cannot want a need and get a result. You can need a need and get a result. A need is a real deed. It doesn't carry want in it. It doesn't carry personal feeling in it. It doesn't carry any type of internal satisfaction in it. A need is geared by divine law to time. A want is not geared to time. A want is like a motor out of tune. But a need is a motor in tune. Therefore, to be attuned to God is to be in need of God. And God provides all our needs. Now, in your scriptures and all your writings of the great sages, it is written, and all thy needs shall be provided. You did not say all your wants and wishes will be provided. Yeah? Your needs will be provided. Yet your needs will gradually multiply in volume and quantity and quality. Ending up, as some people say, boy, you sure want a lot of things. You know, I end up carrying more of my stuff than I really started out in the first place to get rid of. I try to get rid of every kind of thing and I end up getting more and more given back to me like if I'm... So, do I really want it or do I need it? You see? But this is how it works. In your early stages of growth, minimize your existence to the bare needs. Bring the mind to say, I need these things, and just minimize it. And do just those simple things. And don't worry about how long it takes, because this is another life of a realized master. It has nothing to do with body form or length of time. It has to do with consciousness. You can be 12 years of age and you can have cosmic consciousness. You can be 90 years of age and have it. Time has nothing to do with it. It's just consciousness. When I was a young boy, I wanted to be a tailor. I ended up being one. After I finished it, I never used the profession. So I realized a want was never a need. Because I never made a living in it, never used it to make a living after I graduated from it. Yet I earned a good portion of the time when I was studying through it. And I found out that was a want was never really a need. When you called up before, all that time, those were wants. A need had to come. And a need could only come through certain laws of action in the lives of your involvement. This is a need in the fact that your dad is. These are needs now. We're dealing with a life now, the actual life principle. When the person is on the borderline between what is called suffering, frustration, and joy. There is where need exists. At a particular balance between a frustration, a pain, and a joy. You know, the joy is that in you and in your mother and in your sister. The frustration is in your father. He doesn't know what's occurring after the operation, which was the pain. But the joy is going to be when he realizes or knows now from another source that what he has passed through is turning out for the best. See what I mean? These are all things. Now, take the joy and the pain with your own. You called several times and those were wants. Yet, I remember receiving a letter from you. And you said, Jeeves, that guy never replies to my letters. I'll put it this way. I read a thing, but I give it enough time to mature first before I reply to it, because I know by the time I reply to it, those very things that have been asked in the question, in the letter, will be experienced. But until they're experienced, when I come with the answers for it, you would have appreciated it. You would have understood it. Because you have to have the answers after the experience. If you have the answers before the experience, you're prejudiced. You may think you were hypnotized into your answers. You see what I mean? You must have the experience first to evaluate when someone points out or accentuates. The reason a guru or a teacher exists or a spiritual person exists, not only to bring you back to God realization, is to accentuate those things that represent God realization. Should I give tribute to Caesar? Was asked by Jesus, you know. And he says, give me a coin. We look at it. Said, whose inscription is this? This is Caesar's. Well, give this what Caesar belongs to Caesar. And give what to God belongs to God. He didn't say you shouldn't pay the taxes. Right? Whose money are we using? Uncle Sam printed his big face across the thing. So you might as well get what belongs to him. The guy's actually only loaning it to you to survive. But what belongs to God still belongs to God. Those values of living, those truths about yourself, these are things that need to be accentuated. These are things that need to hold on to, because under any trial of physical strain or pain or emotional upset, it's only those things that you have been aware of that are true to your nature, and that have been accentuated by others along that same path. Those are the values that are going to stand to you in your good. Those are the things that will make you realize lives of great men all remind us we should make our lives sublime, not make our pockets be aligned. We make our lives sublime, and they going ahead of us, they are living through these experiences before us, leave footprints on the sand of time, make some impression in our mind so that time passes easy for us, that time is not a burden. We don't live in a state of boredom, we live in a state of full enjoyment of time, the timeless time. We can appreciate the timelessness of it now. You see? Because we're alive now. We don't. Not tomorrow, not yesterday, it's now. And when everything is said and done, then you get a blow on the head, it's still gonna be now. And when you wake up from the blow, it's still gonna be in the now. So the thing is, we gotta realize it is the joy of aliveness, the joy of happiness. No, our imagination is not playing no tricks on her. Yes, she has had the inner experience. See, many of us travel on the inner plane while we sleep, you know. We have astral projection. Remember this, when God created this body, or when God enclosed the soul, see, we must understand what he's saying. He says, let us make man in our own image and likeness, male and female created him. And he breathed the breath of life into man, and man became a living body. Not true, a living soul. The last word was soul, it became a living soul. Man is not a body, man is soul. But it takes meditation to prove it to him that he is soul. Otherwise he cannot prove it. See? Now, when we sleep, we experience a form of traveling of the world mechanism. Now this soul mechanism is a composite. It's a composite, like a three-legged stool. No leg is more important than the other. In this composite of soul, the body is not more important than the mind, and the mind is not more important than the spirit that holds it together. Yet the whole thing is soul. It vibrates as soul. That's what he is. Now, this realization is what he's trying to get at. We are all trying to realize this composite, this interrelationship between the body, the mind, and the spirit, how this thing works as a unit. Now, if God breathed the breath of life into man, let's give this look at us. God breathed the breath of life into man. Man became a living soul. Man is linked to God only by breath. Now, that doesn't say you must regulate your breath. That doesn't say you must have some form of interference with breath. You are linked to God by breath and a form of soul. But you must be able to recognize this linkage in order to be free from this imprisonment of the body. And this recognition comes by awareness. And they give a method of how to recognize by saying, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was made flesh and dwelt with man. Sound. So by being aware of the sound is being aware of breath at the same time, is being aware of soul at the same time. And meditation is a link to it. Now, in sleep we do separate. We have an astral body going out, which is an electrical field charge. It goes out and travels, maintaining a hole in itself. And the astral body is a composite of 19 elements. What are 19 elements? The same 16 chemical elements that you have in your body, plus the element of feeling, circulation, crystallization, the 5 senses, smell, touch, hear, and taste. All these are all locked up in us. And we it maintains itself in an electrical charge. And it's aware of itself where it is. And it travels. Now, if someone has the same experience and they are traveling, they will meet and recognize and they'll link up on that inner plane. But they may not be conscious of it while it's happening. When they come back into the waking state, they may have a reaction and they can recognize it. And they may see it. Then they can understand it. Now, the purpose of recognition is strictly to realize that we are citizens of two universes. A universe of the physical existence and a universe of electrical existence. And that we have access to both universes at the same time, like Saint Paul. He says, I rebuke you in your rejoicing because I live and die daily in the Lord. In other words, he's saying, I understand your involvement in the five world sense, in the five sense world, the world of the five senses, but I live and die, I experience another world while I'm in the five senses too. I pass through another existence and another realm. And he is in the Lord, he's in this universe. He's experiencing a daily shut off of the five senses and stepping into another experience, another realm to experience it. And therefore he can claim to be a citizen of two universes at the same time. Now, meditation helps us to go through that. Dreaming is another way to go through it. The door is open to us by either dream or meditation or some other agent, external, but never permanent. The only thing that is permanent to us is by meditation, because through meditation we pass through it carte blanche. Because God is already done, give you what is called a credit card to come in there. He didn't give you a credit card to go and buy the other techniques. In other words, the other ones aren't really genuine to the extent that it remains with you. Meditation will remain with you permanently, because it is the actual science of contacting the soul.
Could I ask a question?
Yeah.
Can you tell us who our master is? That for us to know?
God is the master. Men are merely reflections of this awareness in man who have achieved that level of awareness. The disciple will know his master, because when the disciple is ready, the master will always be there. The thing is this, how to recognize your master. You see, everyone has a master in a human form. God is the genuine master that comes through that form. But how can you recognize See, master may not even reveal himself to you that he's your master, because this is an imposition of his course. He allows you to feel it. If you feel it, you know it. It's in there. And when he is in your presence, you can sense it. That's not a principle. No. There are masters who will be coming to this country. And they will be teaching meditation. They'll perform the surgery of initiation to people. And you will meet them. The thing is, will you be prepared for it when it happens? Are you, would you be in that room? Be able to profit from that experience. Many people who meet a master and they cannot profit from the experiences. They're unprepared for it. And the master has to come back another time into their lives. It's being prepared is the thing. See, the students say, when the student is ready, the master will be there. And he doesn't have to stay in the presence of the master too long. This divine ego says, thou shalt have none other God but me. Now you see me, you see God. Now this is a divine ego. To a very certain extent, that has nothing to do with the limitation of the body. That's to do with the higher world truth. The thing is, what you're trying to see is that why a master pick a businessman first as a disciple to be. To, that's like how Jesus picked on Peter. Of all the people, he picked Peter. He picked up Will. You see, a master is pure intuition. That is what he is. He is a living embodiment of pure intuition, knowing directly, independent of his five senses, all the time. Now, the closest brother to intuition is willpower. And intuition always seeks willpower. And on willpower, it builds a realized individual. But willpower is limited because there is another force within all of us that eventually transcends willpower and goes beyond and gives us intuition a whole lot easier, but we don't have this develop in us. And this is love or devotion. The natural love of the heart, the natural love of the feeling of it. This is hard to develop. People think you're kind of oddball, you know. You're just oozing out with love. You know, it's scary, kind of nuts or something. You're just oozing with love. But sheer devotion is all love. This is greater than love because this will pull you up faster. Because sheer devotion is recognition. And this is what John had over Peter. When Peter wanted to find out from the Master Jesus, and that's in the life of Peter, John, and Jesus, we see the three phases of man's own nature. We see intuition, we see willpower, and we see love at work. Yeah. Intuition builds upon willpower. Yet intuition is closely knitted to devotion or love, and can transmit easier to love. But intuition cannot leave anything substantial because love can be hurt very easy. So it uses will as something substantial in the physical world to leave it to. So if he was going to leave his teachings to somebody to carry on, he'd have to have a man of dynamic will who can talk them down to the truth, you see. So he leaves that knowledge to a man of dynamic will. But he transmits all the experiences. There's a big difference of leaving your knowledge to a person who has the will to carry it on, to see it applied, than to leaving or transmitting your experiences to a person who will experience these things in themselves. And that's love and devotion. He transmitted many of the mystical experiences to John, but he transmitted his work or his ideals to Peter to carry on. Now, when you meet your guru, you will discover for yourself which phase are you in. Are you in the will phase or are you in the devotion stage? Because he will transmit this to you. He will awaken something in you. And you will recognize it. When he awakens the will in you, you will see it. You will find you have the enough vitality to go, because he's going to aggravate you. He's going to cause you to want to resist him. You see? Like my friend who's coming to visit me. You see? That is an aggravation, that's a sort of a resistance. Whereas devotion, there is no resistance. It's like water. It just flows. It just oozes out. Looking for a home, looking for a home. Look at the whole view, looking for a home. That's a good sign, life. You see, you have everything complete tonight. You have the flowers that have life, you have the fruit that gives life. You have human beings that life flows perennially. We needed one more thing for the animal kingdom. There we had a creature came in there from the animal kingdom. This is, when two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst. Mineral kingdom, vegetable kingdom, human kingdom, animal kingdom, insect kingdom. You see, we don't understand the principles of these great masters when they were talking. They're talking with a very, not in the sense that we think they're talking, they're talking of something vast and very scientific. When two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst. Now, this has a threefold explanation. It can mean when two, three people get together. Now, we assume right away he meant three people. You see, we make the assumption because we want to make the assumption. We don't need the assumption. We want to make this assumption that when two or three get together, two or three people get together, he's got to be in the midst with us. Not realizing what it really is. We wanting this particular way of the thing. When two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst. When two or three good Christians from one same church get together, Jesus has got to be present. So in my name is the same thing. He really wasn't talking of any of these things. We live in so many different kingdoms of consciousness or planes of existence and so many different levels of life that the moment a man of truth or anyone who is interested in the truth of his existence, the moment he gets together in the consciousness of I, the consciousness of his own self, and to listen to his own name, that's the vibration in my name, that is cosmic vibration, that's the vibration or the frequency of the I-ness in you, when the three levels of existence will come into focus, that is the mineral existence, animal existence, the human existence, when these are synchronized, that's why we call this a sinesto, or they call a satsang, a meeting of souls. That was a soul that went through, this is a soul, and you and I are souls. See, he's happy now. But this is, when they are gathered in my name, in this cosmic frequency. Because where is this, where are we going to get in the first place? Not in a motel, we're gathering in the whole cosmic arena of human life. We're right here in the universe of life. There am I in the midst. Because he's not over there or out there. He's in the midst. He's in the here-ness, in the now-ness. He who? Life itself. The cosmic life itself is present all the time as a song frequency passing through us in the form of flower, man, beast. And it is living relationship that is spirituality. It is not, this is because the thing must be living, the thing must be a living experience to see it going in simplicity, not in complication. It's to see, because living experience is a simple thing. Truth is simple but difficult to comprehend. The mere fact that he crawled right through all the door, came in right in the satsanga, he was blessed. Realize that. The soul, that any creature, if a cat came around, I have many cats come around, the moment they come to a satsanga, and this is what a satsanga is, the moment they come to a satsanga, their vibrations are lifted up because we are speaking at a frequency involving the highest possible thoughts man can generate as to his the origin of his existence and the nature of his existence. And that creature is partaking of those vibrations all the time. Here he's coming back, you see. He hasn't decided where he's looking for home yet. The orange may eventually, no, you don't want to eat.
And yet he's not conscious of what is of being lifted up.
Many of us are like that when the Guru is with us. The
Guru,
you see, the Master does not make you or shock you into the reality that he's lifting you up. He's lifting you up in subtle ways, that's why. He does not have to be in your presence. He can use another human being to flow it. Like tonight, I am not helping you in my physical. It's the message that flow in through my consciousness that is helping you.
Why?
He raises evolution.
Why he raised your vibration so quickly?
Oh my gosh.
You see how he's trying to show you a lesson? Huh? He's teaching you a very good lesson. Though we grovel in the earth, we must learn to fly at night. In other words, though we live in our five senses in the physical world, we must learn to free ourselves and fly. You know, happy is the soul that can fly. Everybody is looking for soul liberation. What is soul liberation? The ability to step into the next realm while in the physical frame. Because there is a realm we eventually will live in when we forget the frame. And flying, why every man feels that he has this ability, you don't know why. Flying is an indication of the astral body going through many times in and out of it, in sleep or in dream or in meditation. Flying, the need is there, you see, it's built into us, that we have a portion of our mechanism that takes flight under certain levels of awareness. And soul flight, this is where the word comes in now, soul flight. Vidal says, how does the soul travel? By aeroplane? By walking? By swimming? By running? No, by flight. You see?
Where does it go?
It goes into the hairness. The hairness. That's where it goes. So in other words, the soul goes nowhere. There's nowhere for the soul to go because it's omnipresent already.
Right.
See? But you have to recognize it. Recognizing omnipresence is recognizing tranquility as an endlessness within you. Anytime you put a limitation to this tranquility, you have to open your eyes. See, like our friend here, she's immersed in tranquility. The moment she opened her eyes, she put an end to it. Right? But the moment you go back in, it's endless. I said your tranquility would be endless if you go back inside. And the moment you open your eyes, the tranquility is ended. We're inside, it's endless. When we're outside, it's broken. Now, the sages don't say that we must live inside all the time. That's not the purpose of going in. The purpose of going in is bringing it out. That is the purpose of going in. See? You must be able to go inside and bring this force out so that you can live it. That's what you're looking for. Otherwise, what is the sense of going in? The sense of going in would just go to sleep. You see, the joy that you experience from a good sleep and a good dream, that same joy should be able now to transfer itself from that state into the waking state. And it should transfer itself from the immobile state to the mobile walking state. This is the pure consciousness. The pure consciousness is motion. That you are able to carry it, love with you all the time, and it flows. It's never stopping. This is what you, then you realize that this universe was made for you. There is nothing else here, but it has a purpose. Because the real purpose of man's existence is the realization that he is soul, and that everything in this universe was made for him, but not to be enslaved by anything. You see? If we are enslaved by it, then we are made for the thing. Let's just say, well, if I don't have a job tomorrow, I don't know what to do. But if jobs are made for men, it makes no difference if you have one tomorrow or not. You'll always have a job. I'll give you a little illustration. You folks came down because there was a need district. Before there was no need, it was want, right? And you generate enough of desire, enough activity to get the fires going, you exert the will. And then you made the first step into action. But when you asked me the question last night, should we come? That's what you said on the phone.
I said, should I come?
Right. Well, you were representing everybody in concern, so it made a difference. I said, yes. Divine Mother willing, it opens the door. She sure poured down a bunch of rain this morning to clear up the atmosphere, whatever it was. Anyway, but this is what I'm trying to say. Now, you remember before I went to work, I wasn't looking for work.
That was the criticism.
Yeah.
The yogi not working.
I'm a yogi that don't work. So what kind of yogi are you in this modern society? So I says, okay, if this is it, then all right, we shall prove if really the divine law works or it doesn't work, or this is just a bunch of nonsense we all building up in the imagination. I got a job, and the name of my boss is Wade, W-A-D-E. So I said, now, how else can I get something better than that? I'm wading through the financial difficulties of this world that they're talking so much about. And the type of work I'm doing is called corrosion control. I'm corroding, before I'm getting rid of the corrosion of the soul, now I gotta get rid of the corrosion of the metals. So I said, this job is made for me, I wasn't made for it. I'm sure you how everything will work out. What name was more appropriate for the problem that I was supposed to be facing? This, as everyone says, a financial problem. Okay, it's a financial problem. That's the biggest thing. Here I got a job owned by a company called Wade. So I said, Mr. Wade is wading through the financial difficulties. If that is the problem with everybody, so that took care of that point. Now, all around, I see this particular law works if you're willing to cope with the thing and don't fight it. This is matter, that's all that matters. It's to cope with the thing. As long as you don't fight the thing, it works.
But it's hard for those of us who still haven't really, you know, done anything. And, you know, to face, you know, the fact that, well, we are going to have to take care of ourselves somehow. Yeah. You know, if we were already doing something, it would be different that we haven't done anything, but we're still dependent on our parents. It's hard not to think in the future, because that's, you know, what's going to happen. It's hard to stay.